Good morning. You're listening to KUNV 91.5, and this is Neon Eden. I'm your host, J. Patrick Kulikin. My co-host, as always, Las Vegas Sun reporter, Tovin LePan. Sunday, we published a long look in the Las Vegas Sun at the Canyon Springs High School football program, which produces some excellent student athletes at a school with some big challenges, including 75% of its students eligible for free and reduced price lunch, which is a common measurement of poverty. Canyon Springs is a so-called turnaround school this year with a new principal and some new staff to try to raise student achievement and graduation rates. Joining us to discuss Canyon Springs football and academics is Hunky Cooper, the team's coach. He's a former UNLV All-American, one of the best players in the history of the Arena Football League, and the coach of Canyon Springs for 4 years. Thank you for joining us, Coach.
Thanks for having me.
So you arrived at Canyon 4 years ago. What did you hope to achieve when you got there?
Well, when I first got there, I actually got there 6 years ago. I was there a couple years before I was a head football coach, and I just knew what the game of football had done for me and the background that I had come from, and I just wanted to show these kids how to use this as motivation rather than an excuse. In that neighborhood, in the neighborhoods that I grew up at, there's not a lot of financial resources, not a lot of jobs, not a lot of education. Education provided, but it don't mean people are getting it. And I wanted them to use their abilities, their talents, football, basketball, baseball, whatever they could do and apply their academics and get a $250,000 scholarship, which nobody had that lying around the house. So I just wanted to give them avenues to be able to get an education and extend their careers academically through their athletic abilities and be able to be self-sufficient for the next 20 years of their life just by networking, getting an education, and using their skills.
Mm-hmm. And how's it gone?
It's been tremendous for me. I started at Bishop Gorman when I started coaching high school football, and that guys like DeMarco Murray, Ryan Reynolds, finances wasn't a problem there. It was a problem for some of the kids they recruited, and I'd even seen it at some points become about, you know, we're here, we're paying for you to get an education, and we brought you over here to play football, and that's when it started to be sour on me. If you didn't bring a kid there to get an education, then you're doing it for the wrong reasons. You're setting yourself up for your next opportunity, not that kid. And once I was able to instill that in those kids and show them that even with the money, you can be a great athlete and you can save yourself some money and use that for a master's program or something else. And it worked. I had a great 4 years there. The school was over on Sahara, doing really well. And now you know what they become. In public schools, it's totally different. You have guys that don't have money, mom and dad working two jobs. Or if mom is at home or dad's home, one's usually, incarcerated or not in the home somehow, due to circumstances beyond the kids' control. But those kids still have an opportunity to go to school and make good grades and good decisions. Just need somebody to pull that out of them and show them that it's possible. And, going into Canyon Springs, it was, I've worked at Western. I've worked at Cheyenne with Quentin Carter. I was with Charles Anthony at Western, Calvin January. So tons of tremendous men that are doing the same thing I'm doing and just not getting a notoriety for it. And it's not about bringing a media tool. When a kid walks out of class or he fights a teacher or he does something detrimental to himself, that's usually what catches the media. But there haven't been a shooting at Canyon Springs. There haven't been a stabbing at Canyon Springs. And they put up with most violent school. One thing I like about Canyon Springs is they're honest with themselves. They publicize that stuff. And there are schools that more go on, but the administration aren't putting it in the paper or making it public knowledge. And if you make it public knowledge, I think you could fix it, Mr. Gerzon has come in and done a great job.
That's the new principal.
That's the new principal that came over from Chaparral and what they call a turnaround school. But before there was Mr. Gerzon, there was Dr. Ronan Matthews, who's turned around Cheyenne, who's turned around Weston, who's a great, great principal and educator that's done so much for inner city kids, athletes, and alike. But also, Miss Milana Winters, she had a great 3 years that came from Jim Bridger, which feeds into that school. And what you see is a final product. You get people in Canyon Springs reading on a third and fourth grade level. So if they're getting there on a third and fourth grade level, what has happened at the lower levels? People don't get to see that. They just see that Canyon Springs, we have a freshman. He's a freshman academically. But when you look at credit-wise, the kid is reading on a third or fourth grade level. That's a lot to overcome. So I looked at the feeder schools, which is Jim Bridger, Marvin Sedway, Elizabeth Wilhelm. So there's some problems at the lower levels. So, the final stop is Canyon Springs High School. So we get all the blame. So you got a kid that, in Texas, what you do is if you fail a class, you repeat that class. They don't move you from a freshman to a sophomore but have freshman credits. Mm-hmm. They don't move you from a freshman to a junior then have freshman credits. You create a problem and then have a big senior initiative. You're not going to recover 16 credits in one season, in 1 year. But me, I try to use athletics as motivation. I know football is the biggest program on the campus. I know it has what you call, quote unquote, what people like to call jocks. These are young men with great abilities, and not only athletic abilities, they have social abilities, they have academic abilities, and now when you hold their feet to the fire and when you set a standard, athletes want to reach that standard.
Tell us how you do that, how you set academic standards and how they meet them.
Well, to go to college, I don't care. You may run a 4.3, you may be bench pressing 500 pounds, but none of that matters if you can't qualify, if you can't pass an SAT or you can't pass the proficiencies to get out of school. So what I've done is my program, I mean my coaches, we when we took over this job, we mandatory study hall is going to be in place. And every day, 1 hour after school, before we touch the football field, before we deal with X's and O's, we have study hall. And we have chemistry teachers, math teachers, social studies teachers, SPED teachers, whatever we need to help our kids, minimize their academic issues. If we don't have it in the tutorial system, then we actually go, and the kids go back to their teachers with a note, and the teachers have them there for an hour, and then in that hour they come back with a note stating that they were there working on their classwork. We've also implemented to where they have SAT prep classes. We bought literature, the Princeton Review. We've bought DISC to help them prepare. We have proficiency tutoring. And a lot of this is provided by Communities in School, which is a great nonprofit organization that I work for as well on campus, and is in three high schools and four or five middle schools and elementary schools. This is where the funding come in from Elaine Wynn and the board of directors. Tiffany Lloyd is over the site services, and they go in and they provide services that kids don't have. Dental, health, vision, academic tutoring, proficiency tutoring, after school tutoring. And these are all to help these kids help themselves. And that's what it is. In public school, I would never cut a player. But the standard is set so high they will cut themselves. So it's about the things that we teach them, the character, the integrity, the quality of work that we do, is to help them in the real world. Three no calls, no show. You're done, because this is what's going to happen in the real world at a job. If you don't call, you don't show up, and you don't make arrangements, then they're going to assume that you're done, and they're going to get rid of you. Being on time, promptness. If we say 6 o'clock in the morning, if I can work, all day at the school, then go to work at night, 8 o'clock at night, get off at 4 or 5:30 in the morning, and be there before 6. Then I think you could just wake up after 8 hours of sleep and be there. So,
that's a good point.
So 6 in the morning, we try to get up and get done early. Parents are on their way to work, get them out the door, and they know where their kids are. And then we go out and we work like maniacs for a couple of hours, and then the rest of their day, they can rest and relax, or most of them just sit around the school and want to continue to do things.
You're talking about summer practice and your off-season conditioning.
Yes, summer conditioning, winter conditioning. And what it does also is it occupies them. Don't allow them to run around all summer and do nothing, go from house to house when things aren't going well. You know where they are. They have accountability. And one of my sayings is often, hunky-isms, is be where you're supposed to be, doing what you're supposed to do at all times. And that way I can cover you. If you're supposed to be at practice and you're there on time, I can be an alibi for you. And when you're not where you're supposed to be, usually something's going to happen, and you're going to be on the short end of that.
And you communicate with their teachers too, right? They let you know if they're not behaving well in class and all that stuff.
If I get an email from a teacher, they know it's all bad. and it's like when you get that thing and you're sitting at your desk and you get an email and it's something about your students, you really want to go in that control setting, because I'll go sit in class with them all day. Their behavior, they know what's expected of them. And what I've seen is when our student athletes do well in class and they sit well and they deter people from acting out in class, the classroom become better. It's a better place to learn. And I'm proud of them, because I get tons of emails about progress. And I often get emails, too, where this is the type, I'm grateful that you're here, because this student a year ago wasn't the same kid. And you get rewarding emails as well. So I keep all those emails in a file and in a folder, and I use them against them at times. Other times I use them when they think I got an email from a teacher, but it's a good email. And you see that big sigh of relief. But it's a system that works for me. I think when you're involved with the teachers, when school starts, we buy T-shirts. We try to give every one of our teachers, custodians, everybody on campus, because we know that if we get that school together in the fall and everybody's supporting the football team and we're winning, it makes for a better campus life.
One thing I noticed was you had real command of the team. You speak, they listen. I guess in education they would call it classroom management. But how do you achieve that?
I think earning their respect. These kids, they know what you say about them, and they respond to it. They want that direction. But it's the way you direct them. And if you don't put the time in, if I was just there during football season, I wouldn't have that demand. I wouldn't have that respect. but I'm there every single day. And I'm there for them financially. I'm there for them academically. I'm there for them socially. I'm there for them when they're in trouble. And, you know, I go to court with these kids. I do anything I need to do in order to show them that they're not in this by themselves. But at some point, you know, they have to be responsible for their own actions. And that's, you know, I used to say when I was 17, I can't wait till I get 18 so I can get up out of here. I'm never coming back, you know, because mom and dad had restrictions and guidelines, what time you had to be home. And you know, and now you look back over that, and those were the best things that could have ever happened. I wish I was 17 the rest of my life. I never had bills, wouldn't have had kids, you know, and you wouldn't have had any issues. But you know what? You raise them the right way, and they'll go and they'll do right things, you know. And that's what I think about me serving and me giving so much to them. I think they'll go back. I know they will. Go off and be successful academically in college, whether they play another down of football or not. I think they're equipped for life.
You actually encountered some adversity as a young man. You were a young father, and I think you lost a junior college scholarship. What was going on with Hunky Cooper when he was 18, and how did you then mature after that?
I think it started before you got 18. You know, at 18, they say you're legally grown, so you think you know everything. But Pops used to say, hire a teenager while he's still a teenager, while he knows everything. But it started when I lost my father in 1984, freshman in high school, living in a project. You don't understand death. You know, how do you survive World War II, Korea, and Vietnam, but you come home and you die of heart failure, you know. So you put it in perspective. And for a long time, it kind of beat me up because he said, you know, don't let him take me to the hospital. You know, that's what my grandma died. Everybody dies in the hospital. Just, you know, leave me be. So, and he kind of had his suit in the end of the closet, had his cufflinks and his shoes, wingtips. And, you know, they don't bury people in shoes, but he had all that ready. And my mom used to, they get in an argument every now and then. He'd always tell, I'm ready to go. You know, and he was prepared because he had heart disease. He was diagnosed with it 5 years before he told anybody in my family. And he didn't want to stress anybody out. You know, he knew he had a retirement. He knew he had worked for McGlass Containers. My father was a good dude, man. Was a big physical dude was a great provider. Going through death and not understanding death, you grew up in a project. You see all this happen, and boom, it's in your house. So you're frustrated at God. You know, right when I'm becoming a man and doing things the right way, you take the man that's taught me how to do it. And so until I was 22 years old, I didn't understand death. And my senior game, my homecoming day at UNLV in Chapel, it kind of just all hit me. It kind of just teared up, and it all came out. But, you know, like it was like you were there when I was an amateur, you was there. But now this is about to become the way of life for me. It's providing an education for me. It's going to provide for my family. I'm going to get a shot to play for money, and you're not here. So you go through all of that. But then you go into junior college, and you know, you think you know everything again. You know, I'm the first black quarterback in the history of Trinity Valley Community College. It was Henderson County Junior College then, where Nick Van Axel and Sean Kemp all played, and John Randall. And the four games I played my freshman year, we win. So, you know, boy, we won because of me. That's kind of the mentality you have. And you don't see the big picture. So, you know, in the spring, I tell them, I'm not coming back. You know, you guys, you know, you're racist. You're not playing me because I'm black. And had nothing to do with that. They wanted to develop me. They saw that I had some ability. They wanted to give me an opportunity to develop as a player, learn how to read defenses, learn how to lead the offense, and just become a complete player. Didn't see that. So when I got back in the spring, they took my scholarship. So then the town was only 31 miles from my hometown, but the bus route took you about 4 hours because you're stopping all the little towns. And when I got there and told my mom that I had talked myself out of scholarship, she kind of livid. So the next day, I was killing cows at a place called Vernon Calhoun Meatpacking. I killed about 500 to 600 cows a day. You know, they come in mooing and went out with USDA stamped on it. Mm-hmm. It kind of taught me a lesson. I raised enough money, you know, working there, killing cows. And then my brother, older brother, Greg Esther.
School and football are better than killing cows.
You better believe it. Only thing good about cows is eating them, man. So, my brother was at Walmart. He was a forklift operator, supervisor when Walmart first came into the picture. And had profit sharing and cashing in, and was able to give me some money to go back to school. And I walked on into Vero College, and I think I was the only one that made the team. And fortunately, we went on to win a national championship there and go undefeated and go back and beat Trinity Valley. And I never looked back. And Patrick talked about kids. You know, I had two kids by two different women when I was 18 years old, 3 months apart. And down south, they don't really believe in abortion. I know my mother didn't. So my choices was not to have sex or to raise those kids. And we did. I put myself on child support and bought some Mutual Omaha insurance for $39 a month, and you know, did the best I could. You know, thanks to my high school coaches, Paul Talbot and Carl Saxon, who gave me a little Chevette, you know, and I had to go back and forth with prenatal care and, you know, and getting ice cream and pickles, whatever the girls were craving. And there were some good mothers, you know, they you know, based on the circumstances, I look back, I don't know how we done it, but we were able, it was motivation for me because right about that time, Adrian Peterson's dad and my other friends took one road, and I was able to take another one because I had kids, and you kind of know what happened with AP's dad and my buddies. They all got caught up in a, you know, federal money racketeering, and I was able to finish college. But those guys are great people, and they came from the same thing that I came from. And you look at AP, and you kind of see what kind of mold we come from. He's tough, and situations don't break us; they make us better.
You're listening to KUNV 91.5, and this is Neon Eden. We're joined today by Hunky Cooper. He's the coach of the Canyon Springs High School football team, and we're discussing his talented student athletes. Coach, talk about the season. How would you evaluate how the season went?
Well, we started off great, man. The summer, our goal was to be state champions, not ever to just win a division and be happy with winning a division. You know, if you don't win the state championship, you're not the best at what you do. I consider the season short. Or, you know, you're not reaching your goals. But our kids came in motivated. This was my first group of freshmen. They were seniors. Time had flown by, and you know, we were ready. You know, we felt we had the skill set. We felt we had the talent. We felt we had the coaching staff. And you know, we jumped out the gate pretty good on Foothill, a team that did us, you know, pretty bad the prior season. And we came out and handed to them real easy. You know, great running game, throwing the ball well. New quarterback, and you know, we perform well. You know, defensively for the last 2-3 years, I think been one of the top defenses on the West Coast, actually, with Stan Davis and that staff, Jody Marshall. But jumped off to a great start against Foothill, and you know, and then we had Cheyenne came in. Those guys, you know, Division II team, but upstreet rivalry that has great talent, that has the same demographics that we have with hunger and poverty and free and reduced lunch and with crime. But you know, I know those kids as well. You know, it's a street that separates us, you know, but we're still a family over there. And David Cochran does a great job with those kids. And you go into it and you play a team that it's all about conversation. It's all about it. You not about wins and losses, but if you lose this game, you got a whole year to deal with it. And biggest crowd of the season, and we handed it to them pretty easy and actually got out the gas in the second quarter. But you know, so we got bragging rights for a year. But you know, Cheyenne goes on to do well in that division and just show you what a degree of separation is right now with sports. But, you know, then you go into Palo, who's a tough, tough opponent, man. Palo's, you know, been one of the top teams here. I tried to build my program at the Palo in Vegas and the Gormans in this area, and they're successful. You know, we go in there and we have a lot of success early. I think it's a football game we easily should have won, but we kind of self-sabotage. And when the game's on the line, you kind of see the neighborhood incidents come up. You know, we don't handle pressure well, or we go about it the wrong way. And these kids still fight for it, though. They know what's at stake, and we lose a tough, tough game. We get two personal fouls right before half. When I think they were going to kneel the football down, they end up kicking a field goal, and we end up losing by 3. Mm-hmm. So then you go into a tough Liberty game, which Liberty has been our Achilles heel since I got here. My first year, I went for 2 at home and lost by 1. And that's what you do. The numbers say do it, and then we weren't going to beat them in overtime with the power they have. But, you know, and we lose a heartbreaker to Liberty again. First play of the game, throw an interception, and you know, and everything that we talked about, they did, and everything that we needed to do to win, we did, except for a crucial point, down and distance, short and goal, first and goal, in the red zone. When it was money time, we couldn't produce the money, and we lose that one. So we lose 2 in a row, and then we come back and we fight.
Stop for a second and talk about. You mentioned that you used the word self sabotage and these close situations where they just couldn't seem to get it done. What's going on? What was going on with
self-sabotage?
That?
I talk about it with them all the time is that, you know, things, no matter how hard they work at home, at school, in the community, it's feel like, you know, it's never good enough, you know? And once you start seeing traits of something that's happened in the past, then you kind of become, well, here we go again. You know, rather than saying, you know what, last time we were here, this is what happened. This time, let's handle it this way. They don't have that yet, you know, and so they've given up their summers. They made good grades. They made sacrifices academically. They're smart kids, and they work hard, and they've earned the right to be successful. But when those moments come, rather than seizing the moments, they sabotage the moment. They do something, fumble the football. They jump off sides, and it's like, here we go again, you know, and that's what it is. And And I, no matter how much I tell them, you've earned the right to be, you've earned the right to be successful. And they have, trust me, what they've been through as a group is daunting, you know, that we haven't won a state title. But again, you just have to get back on that horse and you try to go and find the next group and make sure they understand that you're in control of your destination. And, you know, what the work you put in now will dictate the outcome, and hopefully then we'll get there.
And there wound up being, just to complete the season, you won several more games, but there was another last-second loss to Green Valley, and then certainly a winnable playoff game again to Liberty. How do you make that next step to overcome all that, maybe final barrier to getting?
It's funny that you say that next step. I remember being a 32-year-old player in the league, and you got these young, fast kids coming in, and here I am starting to age. You know, I played in the league 10 years, and these kids coming in looking like Carl Lewis. These kids can fly. And you're like, you know, what do I do? And I know I've prepared as a professional. I know I've developed my body where I can have durability and ability. And these kids, the same thing, man. They you just have to keep pressing forward. You keep pressing on and know that you paid the price to be successful. When I believe in quantum leaps. I believe that, everything – most people think things have to be done strategically in order to be successful. You have to have step one, step two, step three. And I think in year one, I done most of those things. I got them out of the way. And so you got step one.
What was the step one?
Step one was to take control of this football team and make sure they understood that we were student athletes first. That's my deal. I don't care how talented you are. You can run a 4.3. You can high jump. You can long jump 35 feet. If you don't do what's required of you to do to be on this team, you won't be here. We will go to class. We will make good grades, or I will remove you from this football team. And I established that right away. Step two was we will be a team. We will wear the same thing. We will do the same thing, and we will be one. You know, so before I got there as a head coach, they used to wear green shorts, red shorts, white socks, spotted socks. You know, come at practice at 2:30, 2:35. The stars would come out 2:40. Another one comes in and get right in. That wasn't gonna happen because at 2:30 I'm closing the gate. And then my other deal was wherever your spirit pack is at, that's where you'll be. Your spirit pack is basically what we wear every day. So if it's in your mom's car, you go get in your mom's car. If it's at home, you go home. So that's what it is. If you're not going to be out here as a unit, then you're not going to be here. So we established that. And then it was to be as physically as we possibly be. Be the most physical football team that we can possibly be and do it smart. You can take a hammer and you can hit a wall all day. If it's 12 inches thick, you're not going to do anything. So you probably got to get a jackhammer. So it's just being strategic in what we do, striking with a plan. The other thing was to get the community involved, and we've done that. We've got our city councilman Lawrence Weekly has been a tremendous support for us, and he's at the games, and Stephen Horsford comes out, and Ricky Barlow, they all come out. These are your kids; they're in your ward. Come out and support them, and they've done that hands down. And I think our community really responds and respects Canyon Springs football.
Let me ask you, though, I don't disagree, but I will say that, and you must see this from having come from Texas, small crowds at football games here in our valley. What is to explain that, especially considering the high level of play?
I don't understand it, Patrick, because there's too many schools in the city, first and foremost. In my hometown, it's 19,000. It's two high schools. Average about 900 apiece, and those games are completely filled. Mm. Playoff game in the state of Texas, they use the NFL stadium, 60,000.
Right.
But you know what? Those are the same kids that are out there academically inclined to. And when you get behind the kid, when you got a community, you got your parents, you got your grandparents, 95% of our success comes from support outside of, you have to have that support to be. When I sit at a playoff game and I see a team bring in more fans than us, that's daunting to me. But again, there's not two parents in all of our houses.
Mm-hmm.
Parent does have to work. Grandmother
working
not
nights,
able to get out.
Yeah.
So you take all that. You have to keep all that in perspective. Everybody don't have money to get into the game. So I'm not paying $5 or $6 to get into a game. How are you going to pay $5 or $6 to get into a game when you might not have nothing to eat in the house? So you take it all and you put it in perspective. And then you got three high school games going on within 2 square miles.
Mm-hmm.
I think
Alexander Road.
Yeah, Alexander, you got Mojave, you got us, and you have Cheyenne. And then really Legacy as well. Rancho too, so they're all within 5 miles. So you got all these games. I think if you had just like Katy High School, these guys super big, tons and tons of people. But you just, I don't think they value sports and the avenues that they generate for you like they do. If they did, they have a professional franchise here.
Mm-hmm.
Not semi-pro or not, you know, D League or not you know, minor league baseball, major league baseball. It's a major league city. It has one of the busiest airports in the world, but people don't come here to see a sporting event. That's why professional sports haven't worked. You know, so you, if you get a great look at UNLV, when I got here, my first high school, my first college game, I'm excited to come out and there's 17,000 people there. And I'm like, I played in front of this on Friday nights. And, you know, but we had a lot of Texas players come out that, excuse me, following year. And, you know, we had a pretty good season when I was here, though. But it's just not, it's not something that's coveted like it is down south. Everybody, the police, they want to work. They'll work the games for free, you know. You see the people run on the field with the coaches. The first people you see are state troopers, you know, and they enjoy that camaraderie and what sports does. And in Texas, you know, the high schools in the city, the little league team. So we have a Palestine football team, middle school and elementary school. They play the same schedule. So you generate those rivalries from the time they're 6 years old. So you played against this guy since you were six, and now you're both 17, 18. Mm-hmm. That's going to be some competition.
Mm-hmm. So how do we encourage? Because it seems like it's a civic touchstone. It's a great way for people to see their neighbors and to talk about what's going on in the neighborhood. It's almost like church, but football instead.
Right.
And would be very useful as a civic enterprise if we could get bigger crowds.
I think you have to remove the political gain in it. You know, it's just like all of our kids here graduate. We have the Millennium Scholarship. We have probably 50 to 60% of our seniors qualify for that. Okay, but we don't have any outlets. In Texas, you have University of Texas, you have Texas Tech, you have Southwest Texas State, you have North Texas, you have Stephen F. Austin, you have 25 junior colleges that play sports, that cultivate it. We don't cultivate it here. We have two schools. You either go to UNR, you go to UNLV, mm-hmm. and you play football. You football, you go up to UNR. Basketball, you come to UNLV. And we're losing all of our in-state talent. And all these kids are going off being super successful. Steven Jackson, Jerron Kreiner, Devontae Christopher. You know, you got tons and tons of kids that are leaving here, and they're going to other states and they're building nonprofits in those states rather than coming back here and cultivating. Mm-hmm. There's so many youth leagues here, but it's all about the coaches. It's not about the kids, the development of kids. And until we can get these kids, the state of Nevada to understand, again, even at the football banquets, it's frustrating to me that coaches want to give a kid an award that's 5'6", 180 pounds, and he's a senior. Okay, give him a team award. But until we get 6'1", 195, 205-pound linebackers and that qualify and get college coaches coming and look at them, then we're just spinning our wheels. He's just doing it for us. It's not about that. Team awards are good to give. You know, I think it builds a morale. But when you're talking about getting colleges in here to get kids out, it's a whole different beast.
Mm-hmm. We want to thank Hunky Cooper. He's the coach of the Canyon Springs High School football team, and he's got some excellent student-athletes. You've been listening to Neon Eden. My co-host is Tovin LePan. Our producer is Steven Zeller. Thanks so much for listening, and tune in next week.